You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. Yesterday, CNN and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said 65.5% of adults here in the United States have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. And the Indian or the Delta variant continues to spread all around the world. Joining us today is Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. He's going to talk to us about that and, of course, answer your questions. So if you have a question, get it in to us now, because we will only be talking with David Pate for the first half of the show today. So email us right now, boisestatepublicradio.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma. Welcome back.
Thank you. My goodness, I feel like I've been gone for like a month and getting back into the swing of things here. And I must say, I did not pay attention to the news when I was on vacation. So I am catching up.
That is terrible.
I know. Terrible. Okay, can we talk a little bit about this Delta variant? Because CBS News is reporting that this particular variant, it continues to spread, and it is 60% more contagious than the UK variant, which is also known as the Alpha variant. So, Dr. Pate, what are you seeing with this Delta variant?
Yeah, Gemma, you're quite right. We've had a number of variants. We've had a number of variants of concern. But this one is the most troubling one we've seen so far. And the reason for that is there's three things about variants that can concern us. Number one, that they're more transmissible or contagious. And just as you said, this one is. In fact, as you said, it's probably at least 60% more contagious than the UK or the Alpha one. But recall that the UK or Alpha was about 50 to 60% more contagious than the previous one. So the degree of transmissibility, contagiousness, is significantly higher with this new Delta variant. So that's one thing. The second reason we can be concerned about variants is that they cause more severe disease. And most of the variants we dealt with before, it's just been a matter of them being more transmissible. We haven't seen more severe disease. We're not sure. The question is still out on the Delta variant, but there is some mounting concern. And in fact, the World Health Organization has already concluded that it does cause more severe symptoms and disease. And then the third reason is this so-called immune evasion or immune escape. In other words, the ability to get infected with the variant, even if you have immunity from prior infection or from vaccination. And we really haven't had hardly any issue with this third criteria before. With the Delta variant, while the vaccines are still very effective, for the vaccines here in the United States that are currently available, they're really only effective if you've gotten both doses. So just one dose of the vaccine is going to still make people vulnerable. And like you said, that 65% of the United States that's gotten vaccinated, that's one dose. When you look at those that have gotten both doses, that falls down to about 45%.
And also with the Delta variant, what I've been reading is that it's infecting younger people. And as you mentioned, I mean, that it seems to be more contagious. And is the reason why it's affecting younger people, Dr. Pate, is that frankly, more older people have been vaccinated, or is it just targeting this younger demographic?
Yeah, that's a great question. And of course, when we do vaccinate older individuals and we have very effective vaccines as we do, you're not going to see as many older people infected. But with this variant, it does seem that it has more proclivity for infecting children. And it also seems that children may play a greater role with this virus in transmitting it to those adults who have simply chosen not to get vaccinated, or even worse, those adults who have underlying medical conditions that may mean they haven't developed a robust immune response to the vaccine, like, you know, they're on immunosuppressive drugs, or they have an underlying medical condition or a transplant, those kind of things, those people could be at very severe risk.
So I must say that, you know, within my own family, you know, my husband and I are fully vaccinated. Our 13-year-old is now fully vaccinated. We have a 9-year-old who cannot be vaccinated yet. And you kind of felt like you were starting to get in the clear a little bit, but then boom, the Delta variant. And I must say, I am, not only am I making my 9-year-old still wear a mask indoors, you know, we're wearing masks indoors still because our 9-year-old cannot be vaccinated yet. And I am concerned about this Delta variant. Are those people who are like myself, are we overreacting? Because, man, it feels like for a lot of folks, the pandemic is over.
Well, you're right, Gemma. And this is certainly one of the frustrating things about communicating about the risks, because, you know, I can certainly sound the alarm. And I don't mean to be alarmist. There's no reason for alarm, frankly, except for those young children who cannot be vaccinated yet. This is all in everybody's hands. All you have to do is get vaccinated and you're going to be very well protected. But to your point, here is the problem, is that in most of the cases, what we see is cases from this previous variant, the Alpha one, the UK variant, are declining significantly in these other countries before Delta takes off. The UK was a great example of watching that. And that's what's happened here in the United States. We had big surge in Alpha, the UK variant, back in late March, early April, and that has gone down. And so we're seeing very low transmission rates by and large in the United States. But what's happening is that Delta variant has been regularly increasing. So I remember just a few months ago saying on your show, we only have about 1% of Delta in this country. And then the next time I was talking about, we're up to 10. We are now up to about 20%. It's doubling about every 2 weeks. And what this means, Gemma, is that right now it will look like you're overreacting. But what's going to happen is that transmission is going to, if it happens like other countries, is going to keep on increasing. In fact, the bad intersection we're headed to is that likely Delta is going to become dominant just as schools are reopening. And what are schools doing? Right. They're saying, well, the case rates are so low, we don't need kids to wear masks, but now we're going to have a far more contagious variant. So this is going to be a problem.
So let's talk about the vaccine in children. Because, as we were coming home, I see this headline about myocarditis, inflammation of the heart in a small percentage of kids 12 and older who are now getting vaccinated. And I have to tell you, it kind of stopped me in my tracks, because we were literally going from the airport to my son's second vaccine appointment, and he did still get it, but it makes you pause as a parent about getting your child vaccinated when you see these headlines.
Well, absolutely, because it's scary. Anytime you mention anything about the heart, obviously, you're going to be concerned. And let me just explain where we are. So first of all, it's important to understand that people got myocarditis or pericarditis on a regular basis, even before the COVID vaccine. So this is something that we see, and a whole host of viruses cause that. In fact, one question, while I certainly am suspicious that the myocarditis or pericarditis is related to the vaccine, We have to keep in mind that the other thing that's happening is because we are now socializing more, we're not wearing masks, we're getting together in bigger groups, we are starting to see other viruses really surge. In a lot of parts of the country, for example, we're seeing a whole lot of respiratory syncytial virus or RSV, and we're seeing some other viruses. It is possible that this isn't due to the vaccine, but it's due to the fact that people are getting the vaccine and being even more free with their activities and getting it that way. I remain suspicious it is related to the vaccine, but the FDA is looking at that right now. Now, even if it is related to the vaccine, keep in mind several things. First of all, it's very rare. We have vaccinated 165 million people, and what we're seeing is basically 400 or 500, maybe up to 800 cases of this, but in a background where normally we would see over 100 of these cases anyway. So first of all, it's rare. Second, it tends to be mild. Most of these kids are getting over it very quickly. Number three, for some reason, and I haven't heard anybody with good explanation, it's mostly just affecting males, and the age group seems to be 16 to 30. So even though we opened up vaccination to those 12 and older, to my knowledge, we really haven't seen any cases in kids less than 16. So my guess is the FDA is going to look at this. They might say, let's just give a warning, but it would be very surprising to me if the FDA or CDC changes their position from what it is today, that even if there is a risk, the benefits way outweigh the risks. And also keep in mind, we see a lot of myocarditis in people who get COVID. So again, it's a balancing act. And although it is a concern, we certainly don't want to overstate that concern.
And before we go to break, you know, with this coming up with the myocarditis, but also, as you mentioned, you know, we could see a surge in the Delta variant right as schools are opening, because here in Idaho, in the Treasure Valley in particular, kids go back to school in mid-August. What do you know about where we are in terms of getting children vaccinated under the age of 12? Could this study by the FDA slow that down potentially? Because I think there are a lot of parents, you know, on pins and needles, hoping that we can at least get one shot in our kids before school starts.
Yeah, that is certainly one of the questions weighing on our minds. It is certainly possible that the FDA will decide to go slower with approving the next lower age group for vaccine. On the other hand, if it is true that the FDA is not aware of any cases in children less than 16, like I'm not aware of, if that's true, they may conclude that actually they don't need to slow things down. So I could see them going either way. I do think it's their job to be cautious and to exercise an abundance of caution. So yes, it might slightly slow things down, but at the end of the day, I think the FDA also understands we're facing this big risk of Delta emerging in the country, and we need to get kids protected. And the FDA is certainly going to have it weighing on their mind that we've got the fall coming up and kids being back in school. So I think that's going to cause them to say, let's keep moving unless we're seeing it occur in even younger children.
And remember, we are talking to Dr. Pate today just for general information and education. You still need to go to your doctor to get properly diagnosed. So with that being said, Dr. Pate, we just got a question in from Martha, and it's asking, is it safe to sing in church choir without masks at an indoor service?
Well, you know, that's a great question. The CDC actually, quite surprisingly to most of us, only acknowledged airborne transmission recently, which is the kind of transmission you'd be talking about with singing indoors. And so the CDC hasn't promulgated a lot of guidance about this. So what I would say, based on what we know right now, if you're vaccinated, you're probably in pretty good shape. However, I would be concerned about unvaccinated people being indoors with a lot of singing, because we know that singing is the kind of thing that can cause super spreader events. And of course, with the emerging Delta variant, that's going to be even more transmissible. So I would say if you're vaccinated, you're probably going to be fine. If you're not vaccinated, that will be a high-risk situation. I would also say for those that are vaccinated, if you are concerned, if you do have a lot of underlying medical conditions, because a certain number of people that are vaccinated are still going to be able to get infected, they may need to take some precautions as well.
We had another listener wanting to know, in regards to the Delta variant, if we still have a child who cannot be vaccinated, but the remainder of the family is, what should we be doing in regards to mask wearing?
Yeah, I think it's the approach you've taken, Gemma. Children need to be treated as if they are unvaccinated adults. While last year we believed that children were far less likely to get infected, that is a different story now with the variant. So I think they need to take more precautions. And the other thing is, it's just going to be hard for some children to understand why they're having to wear masks if their vaccinated parents don't have to. And so I think your approach of saying, look, if our kid has to mask, we're going to mask too, I think that makes it easier. It's not necessary, but I do think it makes it easier for the child. Mm-hmm. But we do need to protect children until they can get vaccinated.
You know, Dr. Pate, it's interesting that you say that, because I had a conversation with my 9-year-old, and I said, look, I made a promise to him. If you have to wear a mask, I'll wear one with you, because I don't want him to be the only one wearing it. So, yeah. I mean, if parents are struggling with, you know, it's like, if I'm going to make you do it, I'll do it with you. I realize I don't need to wear it, but right. I also want my child to feel comfortable having to wear it.
Well, I think that's a good approach. Plus, Gemma, I don't think we want the children to think, well, there's something wrong with them, or that they, you know, for some reason, we're more afraid for them than we are for us, you know, some of the unintended messages. So I really think your approach is a good one.
Yeah. And we're doing it just in places where there might be a crowd, right? Like inside. So we have another
exactly.
question. Yeah. So Petra wants to know, when is a booster recommended? And then would the booster have to be from the same manufacturer? So I'm assuming if you got Pfizer, do you have to get Pfizer, et cetera?
So first, there is no current recommendation for a booster. The good news is we are seeing some pretty good durable protection from the vaccines. What is going to happen is, you'll remember, we started a lot of the vaccine trials last summer. So we are going to be getting mm-hmm. some new information about those people that were in those early clinical trials, look at their antibody responses here soon, and we should get an update about how good is their protection. Obviously, if we start seeing some waning protection in those people, then that will lead us probably to a recommendation for boosters. But currently, there's no recommendation for boosters. Even if there does become a recommendation for boosters, it may not necessarily be for everyone. It may be that it will be recommended for older people. We're just going to have to wait and see. The other question that we don't know yet is if there is going to be a need for another shot, it may not technically be a booster. In other words, the same vaccine given to try to boost the immune response, but it may be a tweaked vaccine to account for some of these latest variants. And so you'd actually be getting kind of a new vaccine, exactly the same type, but just new, updated. With respect to can you mix and match, those studies are going on right now. But the early data coming in from those studies looks like that we will be able to mix and match, that you don't have to stick with the same vaccine. Certainly for your initial two-shot series, you should stay with the same vaccine. But if there is a need for a booster or subsequent dose, it's looking at this point like you won't have to get the same vaccine. And in fact, there's some early reports that you actually might even get a stronger response if you do actually get a different type.
So Dr. Payne, I was reading something in regards to if we had to have some type of booster or extra shot, and that with it being an mRNA, that it's a lot easier to make that tweak, as you mentioned, than let's say with a flu shot every year, where they're just like, well, this may be the variant, so we'll make this and maybe hope that it works. But with mRNA, you can really pinpoint maybe what these variants are. Is that, am I making any sense at all?
Well, you are, Gemma. In fact, I think you've got that exactly right. The beauty of the mRNA vaccine is it can be tweaked very quickly. In fact, one of the advantages to the mRNA vaccines was we didn't even need the actual virus to make the vaccine from, which we do in most cases. The other issue is that because of that, it is faster to produce. You know, when you talk about the flu vaccine, most of that is still made on chicken eggs, and that is not a very efficient way to do it. It's actually very exciting to think what other uses, now that we know this mRNA technology works so well. This may open the door for other vaccines that can be used with this same technology now, and made much more quickly, disseminated much faster. So this is very exciting.
So Sue sent us in this question, and she said, the CDC director said yesterday that the vaccines are, quote, nearly 100% effective against severe disease and death, unquote. So Sue says, break that down for us. Does that mean if I get the vaccine, I won't get COVID? Or does it mean I probably won't die if I get COVID?
So it's the latter. But this is bringing up a good point. And unfortunately, this is another area where we confuse people with our language. So when we talk about the efficacy of a vaccine, you have to know efficacy against what. So we could look at how effective are vaccines at preventing infection, period, whether you get sick or not. That is rarely looked at, and we have very little information about that. And that's going to be the lowest level of efficacy. In other words, that you will not even get infected. The next level, which is what we talked about back when these vaccines were first approved, and we were talking about, particularly with the mRNA vaccines, we're throwing around numbers like 94, 95% effective or efficacy. That was against symptomatic disease. So in other words, you did get infected, but you also got symptoms. And so that is a higher, that's always going to be higher than the effectiveness against preventing any infection. And then the final category we look at is what she's asking in her question, and quoting the CDC director, is what is the efficacy against not only preventing against infection, but actually preventing somebody from getting seriously ill, having to be admitted to the hospital, be in the ICU, breathe on a breathing tube, or die. And that is where our vaccines have had nearly 100% effectiveness. Actually, some of the most latest with some of the variants, it's probably around 96% effective at preventing that very severe illness. But even though you would only have a 96% chance that you wouldn't get seriously ill, with the new variant like the Delta, that probably goes down to about high 80% for protecting you from getting infected and getting symptomatic. And it probably goes down into the 70s of actually preventing you from getting infected.
And I think what's super interesting, Dr. Pate, is just anecdotally, we're hearing stories in regards to areas where people are not vaccinated. I mean, for example, like in Springfield, Missouri, only 32% of that county is vaccinated, but COVID hospitalizations are up 210% since June 1st. This is all from CBS News reporting this. And what these hospital administrators are saying, what they're seeing though, is that the few people that come in who have been fully vaccinated, have either not had to stay in the hospital or they have, you know, been an inpatient and been able to come home quickly. That is not the case for unvaccinated people.
That's exactly right. And that is exactly what we're seeing. At this point, almost everybody who gets admitted to the hospital are people that weren't vaccinated. And almost all deaths are people that were not vaccinated. What we're likely to see going forward is, unfortunately, what we're seeing in Missouri. And we're also seeing it in some other places, like there's a county in Colorado where we're seeing this also. And they tend to be more rural areas, which has implications for Idaho. And that is that we are likely to see outbreaks and increases in cases among those parts of a state that have very low vaccination rates, and those people are going to get very sick and they are going to increase the hospital pressures.
I want to thank you as always for coming on and talking with us, Dr. Pate. Of course, Dr. Pate will join us next Wednesday. So if you have questions for him, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Gemma.
More Idaho Matters next.